yet? Happy Friday. A foggy Friday for sure. If you're in the western or south suburbs, you've got the most of it. Even downtown, though, it's hard to believe it's worse there because as I look outside from my perch here on the 18th floor, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive, I cannot see a thing as I look toward the river right now.
I think it's better on the ground, though.
Yeah, okay, so higher up, that's what right. It's really... I mean, are you seeing what I'm seeing here?
I'm not seeing anything.
Nothing, just nothing. So that's supposedly moving out, and I know we'll be tracking the weather. You've been talking about the storm. Was it an advisory we have on the way?
Yeah, advisory at 6 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, so some snow is moving in, and that's good because we have a snowflake expert coming on the show today. He's a physics professor. He studies snowflakes. He was the consultant on Frozen, the movie Frozen. I think maybe Frozen too, but he's the guy they went to to look at how to animate snowflakes. But he's got some just fascinating line of work, and hopefully you'll develop a greater appreciation for the snowflakes. We're also talking about the coronavirus. You've been hearing Steve Bertrand in the news talk about this. First, there's a confirmed Chicago case of coronavirus. Health officials stepped up to the microphones a little earlier. We carried it live here on WGN Radio. Maybe you heard it. 60-year-old woman, seems like isolated case. That's what they're calling it. Not a local health emergency, nothing like that. But we're going to check in with WGN's Ryan Burrow and also with Dr. Steven Salzman, talk about globally what's happening there from both the news and medical perspective, some developments to talk about. It's changing by the hour, frankly. And then the Indoor Blues Fest, the fine folks from there are going to come over. You know how we have all these great festivals in the summertime? And you're like, gosh, wouldn't it be cool to do them indoors in the wintertime? The Blues Fest folks are doing that. They're going to be in here, talk about where you can go and listen to a little blues while they're here. But we first have to get over to Sox Fest because that is going on indoors as we speak. Opening ceremonies, in fact, later this afternoon. And our own Kevin Powell, he's out there. Hey, Kev, how's it going out there?
Hey, Anna. Yeah, speaking of summer, I cannot wait for baseball season. There is a ton of excitement heading into this White Sox season.
Yeah, you know, you hear the buzz, the excitement. I heard Lauren Lapka, longtime, lifelong Sox fan. You can hear the excitement in her voice when she talks about it. So many Sox fans are like that. And I saw Rick Hahn was interviewed, the general manager for the White Sox. It's such a great soundbite because people are asking him about all the excitement and how you're feeling about this team. And he said, hey, had a great winter, but in terms of what we've accomplished, quote, ask me after the parade. I thought that was great. He's like, ask me after the parade. Wow, what high hopes we have. So cool to hear.
Yeah, I think, the point is there's so much excitement because of, look, the rebuild, it's been a stretch here of White Sox baseball that's been really rough. And not necessarily even just the rebuild, but even longer than that, really, you could say about a decade. It's been 2008 was the last time they were in the postseason. So yeah, it's been a tough stretch here. And then they did bite the bullet and say, you know what, let's go full rebuild. And they trade Chris Sale, they trade Jose Quintana, they trade Adam Eaton, and get all these pieces that generated a lot of buzz around baseball. And now that's moving forward. Some of the players that they acquired in those trades have gotten better, and they've produced, and they've shown why you enter a rebuild. And then on top of that, there's no team in baseball who had a better offseason than the White Sox. They addressed all the needs they had. They got a veteran starting pitcher in Dallas Keuchel. They get Yasmani Grandal, who is one of the best catchers in all of baseball. They got him right away. I think that sent the message to Sox fans. I think it sent the message to really the whole baseball world, like, wow, okay, the Sox are ready to contend. So this was an offseason I anticipated they would spend more than they ever had in franchise history in terms of free agency, and that's exactly what they did. So you add all those free agency pieces on top of the core, the Tim Andersons, the Yoan Moncadas, Eloy, and you mix all that together, and That's where the buzz is coming from. That's where the excitement's coming from. And we're only a few weeks away from catchers and pitchers reporting.
How about
and
that?
I can't remember a season that had this much buzz around it or excitement, enthusiasm leading up to it in a long, long time for the White Sox.
Yeah, it is. It's exciting to be part of and partners with us here. Can you tell us who's going to be at Sox Fest this weekend? Who's expected? They always have such a great lineup. Anybody you know of?
Yeah, just about everybody. Luis Robert's a guy. He was one of international free agent signings out of Cuba, and he's a complete, I don't know, whatever you want to call him. Sensation is what they're calling him. I mean, he completely tore it up down in the minors last year down in AAA. The White Sox gave him a long-term contract before he had even played in a major league game. He's expected to make his debut on opening day, March 25th, March 26th, one of those days. Mm-hmm. So he'll be there. Yoel Mercado will be there. Eloy Jimenez, he was acquired in the trade with the Cubs when they sent Jose Quintana to the north side. And he's a full-blown entertainment by himself. So he'll be there. Tim Anderson, basically everybody you could think of. I think all the players are just as excited as fans are. So I think everybody wants to be a part of this.
Yeah, they've got to be getting, I mean, so much feedback. It's so cool to see. Have you seen Hawk Harrelson yet? Because he's my favorite. Remember we were out there with him, what was it, a year or two ago? He was wearing the full white jogging suit with the perfect hair
well,
and the
that's
sunglasses.
What I was going to say. Not yet. I believe he is scheduled to be there. But yes, nobody has the style quite like the Hawk.
Oh,
but yeah, last year he had the full-blown head-to-toe all-white Adidas jumpsuit to go along with some all-white loafers. So
it was beautiful.
That should be fun. It was beautiful, and only Hawk Harrelson could pull off. I'm always a big fan of, and this is scheduled for Saturday morning, it's the kids panel. The kids get to ask the questions to the players. And, you know, there's the innocence there with the kids, and they ask some of the more, kid-type questions. But sometimes they ask questions that are really, really good questions. And I think sometimes they ask them, and the reporters in the room who are paid to do their jobs are like, dang, that was a really good question.
Yeah.
So I always look forward to that. There's going to be it's Mark Carmen doing a panel tomorrow at noon where it's going to be members of the 2000 White Sox who had won the division that year. That's going to be quite the panel. That's Frank Thomas, Ozzie Guillen, Mike Soroka, and I believe Harold Baines is also going to be on that as well. So it's going to be a ton of fun. I can't wait for it. It's sold out, which is no surprise. I think that gives you a good indication of where Sox fans are with this team moving forward. So I think it's going to be it's quite the weekend at McCormick Place.
So opening ceremonies this afternoon, right, Kevin?
Correct, yes. It'll be this afternoon, just a few hours away.
And you'll be out there reporting for us, I'm sure, on the Rokan show later today.
Yep, I'll have updates top and bottom of the hour. I'm sure I'll be talking with Ro. And I know Lauren's very excited about this White Sox season as well, as all White Sox fans are. So it's going to be a good time.
Yes, it will. All right, Kev, we'll talk to you a little later. Thanks for checking in from the White Sox.
All right, thanks, Anna. See you soon.
Sox Fest. A lot going on out there. Coming up next here on the show, if you have an iPass, and so many people do, 6.8 million of them are issued. But listen to this. Should any lawyer, or anyone filing a lawsuit for that matter, be able to get a hold of your iPass records? And what do those records show if they got a hold of them? I think a little more than you'd think. At first, I thought, well, is it just when you go through a toll booth? Is that all you get? No. The answer to that is no. There's much more here. It would surprise you to know that not only that can be gotten, but your cell phone records, your credit card info, that's been turned up in some lawsuits. And right now, the rules for the lawsuits are, well, it's pretty easy to do. We have one lawmaker here with us. She's going to tell us why she's trying to crack down on this, make it much tougher to get those records. And so we're going to have that. She is Representative Margot McDermott, and she's waiting in the PPG Paint Screen Room right now. She'll be on the air with us coming up after this. Here in the Skyline Studios overlooking a foggy Chicago and the river right now. We can't see the river, but we know that it's still there. You just can't see through the windows. We want to get to the news about those iPass records, the data that is stored on you and that is subpoenaable on you, meaning if you're involved in a lawsuit or even if you're not, even if someone files a lawsuit and tries to get those records, they are gettable. What data do they have on you? What should you know about? The representative who is here to try to crack down on what it is, what should be available on you, she's going to talk about her bill to try to crack down on getting that data, making it a little harder. And she's also got some news from the tollway. She spoke with them today. So some movement there to report. All right. Representative Mary McDermott is here in studio, just stepped in, and she's from Mokena. She represents that district around there and here to tell us more about this whole thing about iPass records. Representative, thank you for being here. We've been talking about this for a while, you know, about how these records are out there. And I think some of us have heard there's a divorce case here or there where they've been, the records have been handed over. And you think, oh, okay, well, they probably show you going through a toll booth or something like that. I think what's startling here is to learn how easy it is to get them. It isn't just criminal cases, it's civil cases. And also what data there actually is about all of us that's gettable.
I had no idea about this, although I've had an iPass forever.
Me too.
Until I read about what happened to one woman who was profiled in the fall. And of course, January is the time to bring new bills for the new legislative session. So my staff has been preparing this bill. We've recently filed it, and it's bringing a lot of focus to this issue. It's the statute says right there that you can issue a subpoena in a civil case, say a divorce case or some kind of child support case, and you can get whatever information the tollway personally has, personally identifiable information about the person they're seeking. So they can get your new cell phone that you changed to get rid of your stalkery ex. They can
They can get your new cell phone. So even if you're no longer with someone and you kind of change your number on purpose, that's gettable if it's tied to your tollway pass.
Correct. Or your new address, if you moved, your new license plate number. Any of that personally identifiable information for the $25 that it costs to get a subpoena in a civil case is available to a lawyer representing someone who may not be acting in your best interest. I'm not sure that's what the legislature intended. I'm not sure that's appropriate. In fact, I'm quite confident it's not appropriate. And so we need to fix this and fine-tune this.
Yeah, okay. So I think that is sort of surprising. And I only in researching for you being here did I learn that. Because at first when I read these stories, I thought, well, okay, they're probably just able to get when I go through a toll booth. And that seems sort of reasonable. I guess in a divorce case, that could be somehow meaningful if they think that you're with somebody, or in the past I've seen that they've shown that you have a job, a side gig, that you're not reporting to the husband or wife, that they could find out about why are they going this place every day at this time. But it's more than that. It's actually tracking locations that they give you a lot more data than just when you pass through the toll booth. They basically have a GPS long-term on you that can give you a lot more about where your locations are and when, what time of day that you're there, right?
Exactly. And I'm not sure that any of us, when we got our iPass in order to make our commute more convenient, understood that someone with an interest adverse to ours would have all that information.
So criminal cases seem to be pretty clear for all of us. I think, you know, if someone commits some sort of a crime and police want to, maybe you disagree, I want to hear from you, but if you commit a crime and they want to find out, were you in this area, can we track you to this area, law enforcement gets some sort of ability to access those records. I think where it starts to cross the line is when you see how easy it is in civil cases. Is that the piece of it you're trying to crack down on, or is it the criminal part of it as well?
My bill does deal with the criminal part, saying that law enforcement has to have a warrant, and perhaps we need to go that far. Perhaps they can just make a request the way it stands now. We should talk about that. In this age of so much data out there, what is the line? Maybe the line needs to be different now in this digital age. But certainly in the case of civil matters, we need to do a lot more, I think, to protect people's privacy.
Divorce attorneys have called it a treasure trove of information, that these are commonly subpoenaed for divorce cases. And they say, you know, you can find out all kinds of things, and they seem to use them to the advantage of whoever they're representing and that kind of thing. Do you have a problem with that in general?
I ran into a family law lawyer on another matter just recently in my district, and she has someone who every day issues subpoenas to the tollway in all the cases to find out where the person's going. Do they have a side job? Do they have a squeeze, living somewhere else? I mean, there's just
a side gig or a side person, a side lover. A lot of things on the side can be figured out through this tracking
and
data.
It's a lot less expensive for them to do this as opposed to hire an investigator or do legwork for the cost of $25. And now the cost is on the Illinois taxpayers because the tollway is required by law to respond to all of these. It's a burden on them that they're not happy about.
That's the thing. You know, you can't blame the tollway for complying with subpoenas. That's the law. They have to comply with subpoenas, and they do a good job at it. And they turn over all of the data. In the case we were both referencing, where she had sort of a stalker ex, a woman changed her phone number. She changed her information on purpose, moved all kinds of things, and thought that that would sort of help protect her. And her information was easily gotten through these kinds of subpoenas. And I think that's, I think most of our minds, we say, well, that doesn't seem right. Have you gotten a lot of feedback since you introduced this bill? And we should mention, your bill is tell us more about the bill.
Well, I think we've talked everything about the bill. It's a short, simple bill that was filed.
A short bill, really? I thought they're all so long. That's great. That, you know, so basically, you're saying tollway has to notify a person within 5 days their information has been obtained, and you want to restrict the amount of personally identifiable information.
Basically, it deletes the provision that the tollway can release personal information in response to a subpoena.
Mm-hmm.
It just deletes that permission altogether.
Yeah. So what does, you said you talked with someone from the Tollway Authority today, and what are they saying?
They would like to cooperate in updating this bill. They've already talked to the governor's office about it, and they are looking forward to fixing this and making privacy for tollway records in the state of Illinois very 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Anything from the criminal side, the law enforcement side?
Oh, yes. I already got a phone call from the state police as well. And they rely heavily on this type of information in law enforcement. So I think we do have to look at whether or not a warrant is always required for them to obtain information. I don't have my mind made up about that. We need to talk with them. But they're heavily opposed to this bill as it stands right now.
Okay, so the bill would sort of limit their ability to access it. You have here, so there's more to this. So the U.S. Supreme Court decision has said that police generally have to get a warrant in order to track someone's location through their cell phones. But IPass locations and records here are much easier to get, and you could see they would be a very useful tool for police. So you're going to work with law enforcement in trying to see what the happy medium is here?
Exactly. I think that's one of our jobs as legislators, when we do it, to try to, you know, we're there to represent the people and to figure out where that line should be drawn. So we need to update our lines.
Here's a good question. I don't know that you know the answer to this, and if you don't, we'll try to find it out for you. 815, how much of the information can already be obtained through the Freedom of Information Act?
Oh, that's a really good question, because earlier the legislature did make a provision that it's not FOIA-able. Personally identifiable information is not FOIA-able. You could get general information, like how many people go through Army Trail in a day or a week or a month. But personally identifiable information is not FOIA-able. That was already fixed, but we apparently didn't go far enough.
Are you getting any pushback from people who say, yeah, I don't care, this is fine, it's okay? Are you mostly hearing from the people, I'd imagine, who are sort of troubled by this once they find out more?
I haven't had a single person say it's okay. And I have had a number of people say, what?
I bet the whats are, your phone lines are getting pretty hot with all the people calling and asking, hey, I didn't know about this. If people want to find out more about this bill, and it's a short bill, I've personally had a lot of experience with many long bills out of Springfield, but this is a short one, so that's good to know you can read it very quickly. How would people access you, Representative Margo McDermid, and find out more about your bill and maybe even contribute in some way in terms of trying to give you some more information, maybe something that happened to them?
RepMcDermid.com. There's a contact link right there. You can reach me there. And if you want to look on ILGA.gov, you can reference House Bill 4006.
How are your other fellow representatives responding to this? Have you had an opportunity to talk to many of them about it?
People love the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in previous sessions on a rape kit tracking bill. So that sort of protecting victims mentality is very strong in Springfield. And a lot of my allies from that bill, which did pass and is in effect right now, those allies have come forward and said, yeah, we're going to work with you on this one, too.
You think about it. 6.8 million IPass transponders have been issued. That's a lot. Those are a lot. It affects just about everybody, I think. I mean, some of those are commercial vehicles, of course, but a lot of people have these. Can they track you, do you know, even when you're not really actively going through the toll booths? Is there more data available about location than we think? Do you know the answer to that?
Too technical for me.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure.
I'd like to find that out, and I think we will. We'll try to get that updated for the show, because I think that the actual data, get down to the nitty-gritty of what those records might look like, would be fascinating to see. maybe alarming, maybe not so much. I don't know. But the cell phone records, the private information about your address, your actual cell phone, your credit card data, that was another thing that I saw.
Yes.
That doesn't seem quite right. That doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't.
Well, okay. Well, we wish you the luck. We have luck with this, Margo McDermott, and we know how to reach you. Good luck with the bill. I hope you'll keep us posted about developments in Springfield. When would you imagine this will be taken up, and when would we hear some sort of development?
Well, we start session next week on Tuesday, so in February, it'll start moving.
All right. You hope so. Thank you so much for checking in here on WGN Radio. Margo McDermott, she's a representative from the Mokena area. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Coming up here on WGN Radio, the snowflake consultant for Frozen. He studies snowflakes for a living. That's his life passion. That's his life's work. What is that about? He says he'll help you develop a greater appreciation for snow. Maybe you already have an appreciation for snow. I know driving in it and shoveling it is not the kind of appreciation that any of us really have, but there is another appreciation. He reminds us of nature's beauty. He'll tell you why he even studies snow in the first place. So that's coming up. Also, Lauren tells us how there is a crazy amount of things going on in the Chicago area this weekend, much more than you'd think for a February weekend. The Indoor Blues Festival is one of those things. They're going to be on the show later. And Lauren's got some more information for you coming up here as WGN continues here, the Anna DeVlantis Show. Back live in the Skyline Studios. And yes, thank you, texters. It is January, not February, as I said. It's a middle of January weekend, and there is a lot going on this weekend. So Lauren will tell you more about that coming up, including the Indoor Blues Fest, which is this super cool event, and we'll have more about that. We were talking about iPasses last segment, and we're going to continue to follow up on this because I want to find out exactly what data they can get from you on when they issue these subpoenas, when lawyers or go to court and they pay this $25 and they say, hey, I want to get the data on this person's iPass. What exactly gets turned over? 847, hey, Anna, you're subject today. I was a victim with my ex stalking me via tollway. He canceled my iPass without me knowing. Hundreds of bills before I found out. Yes, something needs to be done. So that is one of the subjects that we talked about, because those cases, there have been a few of them that have sort of been the impetus behind this bill, though I think that there are a lot of other misuses of the tollway data. But we're going to follow up on that issue. And you heard Margo McDermott, who has introduced the bill. She's agreed to come back and update us on it. But right now, we want to get an update from ABC News and WGN Radio's Ryan Burrow. The confirmed case of coronavirus, a woman here in Chicago, definitely has the coronavirus. We saw the health officials earlier. They stepped up to the microphones, Ryan, and they felt like they're on top of it, and they didn't seem particularly alarmed.
Yeah, this is one thing that they're trying to do is try to tamp down some of the fears right now. We're seeing, cities in China be shut down and transportation being halted. But the fact of the matter is, this is one case of a person who we're hearing about who came into Chicago from Wuhan, flew from December where she stayed, came back to Chicago in January. At the time, was not showing any symptoms. It wasn't until days later that she was actually showing symptoms of this. She's been treated. It sounds like she went through the proper protocol as far as alerting a healthcare clinic that this was the issue. They put a mask on her when she first arrived. So everything was handled essentially by the book.
That's what seems great about this case. You got the sense, they even said this is one isolated case. It's not a public
travel
health emergency.
Case, yeah.
She traveled to Wuhan province, the same area where it's epicenter of this, and you see the video coming out of Wuhan province, those hospitals full, the quarantine areas. It's just, I know they've stopped travel in and out of that area. No one's allowed to move in and out. They're trying to contain it there because it feels so far as if all of the victims that we've come to know about have actually traveled from there or through there.
And the CDC says, look, these aren't the first two cases. They won't be the last two cases that we see, in the United States. This is going to happen. There was a group of students from University of Wisconsin-Platteville that arrived from Wuhan. There were six of them. They've all been tested. They're all staying together in the same dorm. Everything seems to be clear there. But to put it into perspective, I just got the release from the CDC on flu numbers. Mm-hmm. We're concerned about two cases of this coronavirus. There have been 8,200 deaths from the flu so far this season, with 140,000 hospitalizations. And we're not freaking out about the flu. This is just something that always happens. So just keep that in perspective,
right?
Obviously, when you think about this. Obviously, there are international ramifications, but,
Sure. Yeah, and I think the press is on to contain it. And so I felt as if all those people who stepped up to the microphone today, they feel like this is under control. There was no reason to panic. There was nothing like that. It's just she's going to be, I guess, treated now moving forward, and she's developed the symptoms, but only in the last few days.
And they say that she's doing well clinically. Right. She's in good shape and she's in stable condition. Where she's staying, we don't know yet. They're still protecting that. We've kind of eliminated a few of the hospitals in the area where she may be treated, but we don't exactly know where she's at right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that. We want to talk about the medical side of this whole thing with Dr. Steven Salzman. He's a trauma surgeon. He's been following the news out of Wuhan province. And I know you're often here on Wellness Wednesday answering medical questions and addressing the medical news of the day. And we did talk about this on Wednesday before we had a confirmed Chicago case and the need to contain something like this. As you look at what you know right now, Dr. Steve, you know, what are you seeing? What do you feel?
I thought the reporter that you spoke with put it wonderfully when he compared the flu to sort of the virus. But again, there are important factors to remember. One of them is containment is key. And there was a lot of positive things you heard from the one isolated case. I mean, the woman was sick a few days after the trip. So that's as to why she would, you know, make it through screening. Well, because she was totally fine and afebrile. So, and the other thing is she had very limited movement outside her home. She didn't take any public transportation. She didn't go to any large gatherings. And so, you know, the problem becomes when one person is able to go into large sort of spaces and spread the potential virus. So none of that we think has really happened. And the other sign is that she's doing well. So you question, you know, how virulent is the strain? And so there's still a lot of unknowns, right? How long is the incubation period? How is it really transmitted? How contagious is it? How severe is it? I don't think we know any of those answers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So how do you remind us again, how does one person get it from another person?
So basically what happens is it's through respiratory contact. So it's from droplets from the oropharynx.
Mm-hmm. So you sneeze and...
Yeah, right. Cough. Sneeze. Right. Or cough, sneeze onto your hands even potentially and not wash your hands and then touch somebody else. It's just that easy to transmit. That's why you have to wash your, you know, just common things. Wash your hands, you know, be careful. And then if you've traveled for that province and you actually think you've contracted something, don't walk out or go see anybody. Call ahead, make sure you seek medical care, and you know, don't go out into any public spaces. And I think just that alone, like what this woman did, this was textbook. If they could all happen like this, containment would be a lot easier.
So you give a lot of credit to our local health officials, how they handled this case.
Yeah, and going forward, like they said at that press conference that they just recently had, communication is the key. And I think when you communicate and you get the word out there and people listen to it, it's beautiful. And then when it's put concisely and people can understand what to do and not to freak out and panic, we can get a lot more accomplished.
Yeah, that sounds like the right advice. So 2,000 people have been screened for the virus nationwide. So that's just in the U.S. I imagine those are people getting off airplanes from the Wuhan province. And what do they do to screen those people? I know they're doing it at O'Hare Airport as well.
They're trained. I think they have some devices where they could tell the body temperatures of people coming off the plane. But the CDC deploys workers to those major airports, and these workers are specifically trained in screening. So it's not this random process. People from the CDC are actually going into those areas, and then they contain it by only going into several airports, so they're not going everywhere else. And again, it starts to you squeeze it off. You know, you're trying to squeeze it off, so you contain it to as few people as possible.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the video out of the Wuhan hospitals. They've been all over the news today and on social media for sure. Just that crowded hospital with people all over the hallways, you know, basically ear to ear, it looks like, with patients showing up at the hospital there as they shut down the borders and make sure that people can't leave there. So they're all going to the hospitals there. Maybe some of them are just wanting to get checked out. Maybe others have symptoms and maybe others are quite sick. But I guess my question to you, Dr. Steve, is what is it that healthcare officials will do? What can be done if you have this?
supportive care, it's a virus, and you screen patients. If they have fever or cough or shortness of breath, you quarantine them in the hospital. You know, a lot of it is keeping on top of things like hydrating them and treating any of their symptoms. But basically, it's just quarantining them and supportive care.
Mm-hmm. And then how did the hospital officials all remain, you know, okay themselves? I guess it's just like the flu or anything like that.
Right. I think once something like this is going on, you know, hospitals are planned ahead. That's why there are so many committees. God knows I've sat on enough of them, Anna,
I know you do.
The hospital. But I mean, there are committees for this. So, you know, bringing awareness to this, the second that that's suspected, the right protocols are put into place. But if you go back to that, I didn't see those videos, but if you go back to what's happening to Wuhan province, yeah, you'd hope that everything is being done somewhat to contain things, because the healthcare workers are at risk, and if people are not appropriately protected, everybody potentially exposed, those being taken care of and the ones doing the taking care, could both be afflicted. So I haven't seen those videos, but that could be a real disaster.
Yeah, so they've canceled a lot of Chinese New Year celebrations in Beijing, even in Hong Kong, places far away as that, certainly around the border of the Wuhan province, that has happened. Disneyland, China shut down their Disneyland as well. Several other cities, they're considering, they've canceled public transportation and they're closing roads. It seems as if they are taking proper measures there to make sure that this doesn't spread any farther.
Right. That's what they need to do. And then you have to hope that the people who are infected understand and sort of follow the right processes like this woman followed. So again, you contain the amount of people or even healthcare workers that this person can come in contact with.
So do you have to be symptomatic in order to be contagious? Do you have to be sort of sniffling or not feeling well? Is it like the flu or unlike the flu, like that?
Yeah, well, no, the answer is exactly. That's correct. We don't know what the incubation period is. I'm sure there's a period where you're not symptomatic, but you can potentially infect others. They don't exactly know what that is yet. But, yeah, no, that's a real concern. That's why, and exactly, this woman came back and she was sick a few days after the trip. So you wonder, what was the incubation period from the time she got it to the time she presents?
Okay. Good stuff to know about. Dr. Steven Salzman, trauma surgeon. He's the founder of Green Care Medical, the clinics that he's actually expanding as we speak into different areas across the Chicago. You're out in the suburbs as well as the city. Steve, where are you now?
Yeah, we're in Hinsdale, Homewood, Palos, Justice, Western and Ogden, and Archer, right near Midway Airport. So, yeah, we're all over the place.
All right. Well, we appreciate you weighing in on this and always like seeing you on Wellness Wednesdays. Thank you, Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve Salzman.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Have a good evening. We're going to have more coming up from our snowflake expert. He is the official consultant for Frozen. He studies snowflakes and ice crystals for a living. That's his work as a physics professor. He's going to tell us why we don't have enough of an appreciation for snow and make us appreciate it more, maybe. Then Lauren also tells us about how mid-January, and it is January, but mid-January, we have so many things going on in the city, more than you might think, a lot going on this weekend, a lot to know about, coming up here on WGN Radio. This is Anna DeVlantis, and this is WGN, and it is super foggy, even downtown. I'm hearing the western and southern suburbs most affected, but if you look downtown, Steve Bertram pointed out earlier, from our vantage point, we're high up in the sky, 18 floors up, it looks worse than on the ground. But a reminder from the 630, remind people, hey, turn on your headlights today.
But make sure they're like the fog lights, because some of those really bright ones make it even more difficult to see.
It's a great public service announcement. That will certainly help. So thanks for reminding us about that. As we turn our attention from the fog to the snow, we have the professor who studies ice crystals and snowflakes. That's his life's work. He was the consultant for Frozen on snowflakes. I didn't know they had one, but it makes sense that they do. He's also the professor of physics and department chair at Cal Institute of Technology in Pasadena. Hey, Ken Librecht, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good to hear from you. I'm happy you're joining us here on WGN Radio. I guess the first question is the obvious one. How do you study snowflakes? Why would you be based in California for something like that?
No, I got into this from the physics end. It's really trying to understand how crystals grow. ice is a good case study. So I grow crystals in the lab, and I try to understand sort of the molecular physics of what's going on.
It's a fascinating work, and I just wonder, you also travel around the world, don't you, to study snowflakes, different parts of the world, and what different types of snowflakes, that kind of thing?
Yeah, snowflake photography is a little bit of a hobby of mine, too. So sometimes I will leave Southern California and go up to the frozen north. And, the really nice snowflakes are not when it's very warm. You want to get down to about 5 degrees Fahrenheit to get the best snowflakes. And so usually I go to, like, northern Canada and places like that to photograph snowflakes.
Do you ever come to Chicago? Because we've got a fair amount of 5 degree weather and snowflakes here. That happens a lot here, Dr. Ken.
Yeah, that sounds good. Kind of windy, though.
You try to pick your places based on perfection. But what is it you ultimately hope to prove when, by this study, if you study snowflakes, you study ice crystals, what is it you hope to learn from it and teach us all about?
Well, nobody really pays you to grow snowflakes. This is not a big science thrust or anything. No tax dollars being spent on this.
Oh.
But really, I'm just kind of interested in it, and I like the analogy of a rainbow. I mean, we kind of figured out how rainbows worked about 100 and some years ago, and we haven't gotten that way with the snowflake yet, so we don't really understand, why it looks like it does, and why the look of the snowflake changes a lot with temperature and humidity, and I'm just kind of trying to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Is it true no two snowflakes are exactly alike?
Well, one of the fun things is we grow snowflakes in the lab, and I can grow two side by side, and they actually grow very, very similarly. I call them identical twin snowflakes because they really look a lot like identical twin people. They're too similar to be by accident, but they're not exactly the same. So,
do you think there's enough appreciation for snowflakes? I know you've written many books about the snowflake, Winter's Secret Beauty. You've got your Guide to Snowflakes, The Little Book of Snowflakes, The Art of the Snowflake. Are these mostly photographic albums just for us to appreciate their beauty?
Yeah, I sort of tried to cover all the bases. Photographic album, kind of a coffee table book, and the science of snowflakes. When I first started reading about this, which is like 25 years ago now, what really struck me was that not all snowflakes look like the stellar crystals you're used to seeing in the holidays. They're all kinds of columns and plate-like crystals and needles and capped columns, which will look a little like an axle with two wheels on the end. And you can see all these things if you just go outside and look carefully enough. So it's kind of fun to go outside sometimes and just see what the clouds are dropping.
I saw your advice. Go out in dark clothing, let the flakes fall on your coat, and then peer at them through a magnifying glass. That's a fun thing to do this weekend if you want to check that out. I want to ask you before you leave us, how was it consulting on Frozen? What was that like?
Well, that was an experience. I just sitting here minding my own business, and Disney called and said, we're making this movie. It's all top secret, but it has some snowflakes in it. And would you like to tell us about what snowflakes look like? So I went to the studio, and mostly I just told them six. Got to make them six-sided, not seven, not eight, not five, all six-sided. And sure enough, when the movie came out, they were all six-sided, and they did a lovely job.
Just like we learned in kindergarten when we cut them out of the paper, right? That kind of thing. That's really cool.
That's right.
Thank you, Professor. Professor Ken Liebrecht, he's a professor of physics at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena. He studies snowflakes, and it was really fun to hear from you. So thank you, Ken, for taking time out of your busy day. Check in with us here on WGN.
Thanks for having me on.
How about that, Lauren Lapka?
I would have never guessed that was a job, but that is absolutely fascinating.
Isn't it?
So cool.
I was like, that's what you do? Okay, that's so cool. So it's just, I would like to get one of his books now. I'm going to have to check those out. Other thing we were talking about is how much for mid-January mm-hmm. is going on in this city. There's a Chinese New Year. We're going to have the Indoor Blues Fest folks on a little bit later. And that seems like a really cool event. I love that they're moving some of our festivals indoors because, think about how great it is in the summertime here. There's, multiple festivals every weekend. And I know some of those involve being in a neighborhood, being outside, having a beer in your hand. So it's a little different feel. But some of the music ones in particular, why not have them indoors?
Well, the city and surrounding areas have so much to offer, but the weather could be so brutal. This is perfect.
It is. So you've got some things that are going on that people may or may not know about. We know it's Illinois Restaurant Week, right?
Yeah. Very
exciting. That's getting
exciting.
A lot of buzz.
of course, that's going to be going on for a while. So it's not like a just this weekend kind of thing, but it does kick off. So that's definitely good to know. A lot of restaurants obviously participating in that. So you can look online and they'll have a full list of everyone participating. And of course, White Sox Festival is going to be going on today and tomorrow. Officially kicks off at 4. By the way, this came in a few hours, if not like an hour ago, that Lucas Giolito will not be there because he has a flu. So that's kind of a bummer.
Oh, that is a bummer.
But just about everybody else is there. So a lot of autograph opportunities and photo ops.
Who would you want to see? I know you're not going to have time to do it this weekend. We've been before. I know. It's so fun out there.
You know, I've been fortunate to get to spend some time with some of these guys and get to know them well. One I have not is Aloy, so I would love to hang out with him because he seems like a big goofball. Like, he's like the big baby on the team, so I would love to get to know what he's really like in person.
Major thing I noticed different between Cubs convention and that convention, White Sox on the South Side, is that people are not using it as an Instagram moment. And to the same degree you see at Cubs, right? It's like the picture is more about living in the moment, not taking the picture of the moment, which I totally was like taken aback by that. It just feels like that doesn't happen anymore. Right. What else is going on, Lauren?
So there's also the mac and cheese. It's not necessarily a festival. They're just calling it a crawl. So
get to different places, different restaurants.
Yeah, you get to go to a few different places from 11 to 7 tomorrow, and you get 7 different types of mac and cheese as well as some drink specials and giveaways. And that's over in River North. So a few different areas that you'll pop in between for that. There's also the Polar Plunge.
Oh,
you know.
Polar Plunge is this weekend.
Yeah, hard to miss that because a lot of crazy, brave people go jumping into Lake Michigan, obviously for a great cause.
Yeah.
It's for charity.
I've never done that.
Me neither. I don't know if I
would
want
to. I'm not sure
to.
That's on my list.
I don't even like going into pools in the summer because they're cold.
Isn't that sad? It's like, it's too cold.
It's only
82 degrees.
Yeah. Just not quite my style. But there's actually also a dog-friendly version of the Polar Plunge at North Avenue because the real Polar Plunge, but the normal Polar Plunge is over at Oak Street Beach. And then there's an after party at Moe's Cantina from 1:30 to 4:30.
So cool. There's doing something also for the Australian wildfire victims and to help with bringing in the contributions for everything that they're dealing with over there. Geez.
Yeah, I see DS Tequila Company will be doing something to celebrate. 50% of the proceeds will be going to help Australian wildlife, obviously.
So drink the tequila and enjoy and then donate the money.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we need to hear before we head to the break here?
Just if you want to celebrate Chinese New Year, totally free over at Navy Pier tomorrow from 1 to 5. They'll have a bunch of performances and parade, you know, the works.
Yeah, and the lion dance. It's so cool. They'll have it in Chinatown as well. I imagine it's going to be a fun weekend for that.
Tons of celebrations.
Yeah, all across. You're right. New Chinatown on the north side, too. And you've got Chinatown on the south side. So there's a lot to check out there. A lot of reasons to come into the city and just enjoy what the city has to offer. Speaking of, we are going to have... Thanks, Lauren.
Yeah.
We are going to have the Indoor Blues Fest coming up on the show. Also, Bella Gandhi's coming up on the show. It's Friday, so we're talking about relationships. If you've ever been through a breakup, would you pay someone to remove your ex from all of your photos? It's a business. People are doing it. If you have a lot of vacation photos, you want to remember those memories, but you don't want to remember the person you were with in those pictures, why not wipe them out? That's happening. Also, what is micro cheating? It's different than emotional cheating, but it also involves no physical contact. We're going to talk about that and more coming up after the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you for your winter pictures. I would like to forward them to our professor who studies snowflakes for a living. And he's just incredible. It's just fascinating what he does, the consultant for Frozen, and some beautiful pictures from our area that you're sharing with us. So thanks for doing that. Those are really cool to look at. Also talking events, best event this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday. It's at the Morton Arboretum. Thank you for that. It's the Husky Hero Weekend. Huskies up for adoption and then a sled demo, too. That sounds like great fun. Perfect in the winter time. Coming up here, we said it's Relationship Friday. So if you've ever thought after a breakup, wouldn't it be nice to get all your photos scrubbed of whoever that was who used to be in your life? There's a business. People are doing it. Would you do it? It's kind of an interesting thing. And then micro cheating, we'll also talk about that with Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy. That's after the news coming up with Steve Bertrand in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. This is Anna DeVlantis in the Skyline Studios on this foggy Friday. Happy Friday to you. Stepping into the foggy studios is Bella Gandhi of Smart Dating Academy. You hear her here on Fridays talking about relationships and dating and all kinds of fun stuff going on in the world. How are you doing on this Friday, Bella?
I'm doing great. I love being here, and there's so much juice to talk about.
There is, and you know, we're already starting to get texters tell us, oh my gosh, I wish I had known about that editing wizard about erasing your exes from all your photographs.
Oh, this,
I mean, why
Lord.
Hadn't I thought of that? And I mean, just in general, that's a great business, isn't it? So what they do, let's talk about it. They take everything, you know, because you put everything on your social media, you've got all these pictures, you want to preserve those memories, and most of our memories, let's face it, are on digital devices now. But you know, you want to remember all those great trips, all those great experiences, but then you got, you know, the ex.
You got the ding dong in there with you. When nobody needs the ding dong in the picture. So I think it's I think it's interesting. What I would tell you is this: if you're going to invest $10 to $15 to erase your ex out of a photograph, I think you should invest in new photographs. Like, that is what I would tell you up front. Why are you going to spend all that money? You know, and there was in this article, there was a woman who had won like student of the year someplace in the UK, and her ex was in the photo, and she said, this is the only photo where I was student of the year. I'm like, okay, but that's great. It was very nondescript. You don't need to use that in your dating profile. Go out and get some recent photos. Don't, that is bad juju okay. to erase your ex. Come on.
I like the idea. And I'm telling you, our textures do too. It's nuts. I wish I had thought of it. That's something I wish I had available to me or knew about it, or people are saying. But I think, okay, so the other mistake I think people make is when they put their profile pictures up and when they're in the dating scene or elsewhere, or even just generally on social media, and you're no longer with that person anymore. A lot of people badly crop that photo out. So there's still the arm around you.
Looks like a crime scene.
Or you see part of their cheek against your... Yeah, it looks like a crime scene. Like, what happened? What happened there?
They put, like, an emoji over someone's face. Or the worst is where they take a marker and scratch out the face or, like, blur it out. I'm like, looks like CSI. Like, we don't need to see a blurred photo. People, in today's day and age, who does not have a camera on their phone, take a new photograph.
Or learn how to do Photoshop and you can recreate your picture from... Greece or Santorini and the sunset and everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just get the lighting right, because sometimes there's a tell there when it looks like the lighting is not quite the same.
100%. And pictures are the most important thing in your profile. I just have to tell you guys this. If you're out there dating, you need 5 to 6 good photos that are no more than 1 year old. So if your favorite photo is of you and your ex in 1998 from Santorini, guess what? Get a new
photo. Not a good photo. No.
Go back to Santorini and take a photo of yourself.
But we all have good photos I have photos that I like of myself, and there are a few years older, and for a lot of reasons, but there, I mean, you know, like, you go back and that's your go-to, but you're saying it should be last, what, 3 years?
One year. People want to date the person in that picture, and as we all change just a little bit year over year, if you want to do it so that you'll never be accused of not looking like your photos and using photos that are 5 to 10 years old, take new photos, people, and don't over-filter. There are filters that can make you look unbelievably young, and those doe-eyed filters on Snapchat. Stay away from all of that if you want a second date,
because people will just be surprised that it's not exactly as it seems. So
they'll
many
be
things
dismayed.
Are not dismayed is a good word. You know what else I've seen as a trend, and you know, I'm sure you've seen this, is that people are now using video, because video tells you so much more about the person. You can get a feel for who that person is, where a photo is so two-dimensional. I mean, you can see how attractive they are, you can see if they're sort of your type, I suppose, or I don't know. You can get a number of things from a photo, but so much more if you put out a video of yourself.
You are spot on, Anna. I think that, look at the way business is being run now. There's less business travel and more conference calling, more Zoom calls with people. Like, I built my website, Smart Dating Academy, last April with a company in Boulder. Never met the person, and I feel like we're family because we Zoomed like 5 times a week. So the relationship you can develop with someone in 3D on video is amazing. And I think in the dating world, you FaceTime each other. Look and see what this person is like in 3D versus 2D. 2D is like a flat photo and some words.
Mm-hmm. We should mention the name of the person is Circe. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's C-I-R-C-E-E. She's the one who started this business where basically it didn't start as a business. She just put it out there that she was an artist and she was scrubbing these photos of exes. And I think her Twitter account blew up. She's got tons of business now of people saying, hey, you know, do mine. I know, she says it's $10. I don't know if that's $10 a photo.
Per photo.
Ooh.
And now it raised to 15 because the demand went up. So this is my point. Like, take new pictures. Why are you going to invest $50 or $100 in deleting someone from your photo. Get new photos.
She's from Iowa. Her name's Cersei. If you just want to do it that way, that's available for you. You know, it's interesting. So there's all this data out now, and I know there's always end of year data, and they're saying that more people are meeting online. It's now the most popular place for people to meet each other, not through a friend, not through a relative, not through going through some social event or bars or that kind of thing. I'm kind of old fashioned when it comes to that stuff. I really like to meet the person. I get a little bit of, I would, in the past when I was in the dating pool, I'd get like sort of like, what, I don't really know who this person is. And there's sort of a little bit of that, the fear of not seeing them in person.
Yeah. I mean, the holy grail for people, to your point, whether you're in your 20s or your 70s, is meeting someone organically or through a setup or through somebody you know. But the odds of that happening, especially as we get into our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, of somebody knowing an appropriate single person that's also ready to be fixed up at the time you are, the odds just get lower and lower. So I don't. Look, online dating is a great cure for that. So I would say use online dating. And it is. I think as technology continues to take over our existence, what don't we do on our phone anymore? Uh-huh. I could look in my living room and see what's happening with my plant right now by one push on my phone. And so, of course, we're meeting people. You can set these dating apps. Literally, if you go to France this summer, there are dating apps where you can start swiping people that are going to be in France at the same time. As you are, right? So don't neglect online dating. And because I think historically, families would stay together, right? Where my parents lived, I would live. I would raise my kids nearby. That's just not the case anymore. With job markets, people go where the jobs are. So that sense of community is also much lower than it used to be. And community is what helps people to set you up with other people.
So I guess trust the algorithms. They seem to do a good job, because I guess the data also shows that people are not any less likely to stay together long term if you meet through a dating site or you meet through a friend or a family member.
No, they're all just pipelines to meeting people. Don't think online is any less than meeting someone through your cousin. Your cousin might introduce you to an idiot. You never know. And the app might produce someone amazing for you. So just look at everything with an egalitarian mind.
I will say the stigma of the whole online thing has totally worn off. It was back in the day, someone very close to me met her husband through Match and was embarrassed and had to get a cover story, and we all had to learn the cover story and be on the same page about how they met, because she was so just embarrassed by having used a site. And that's not the case anymore.
In fact, to your point, in January, just in this last month, two big things. Sharon Stone put herself on Bumble.
Hold that thought. We got to talk about that, because there's the celebrities are on these sites, but also Tinder is adding a panic button. There's a local scam by a Chicago investment banker on one of these sites too. We've got, you know, there's a couple things to talk about. Then micro cheating. What is it? Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy is here as we continue to talk relationships here on WGN. It's pretty new business. I had not heard about it before, but that there is a new business that will scrub your ex from your photos. And she's got a lot of business when she put that out there. 815, spend that money on therapy. You don't need to put it.
Amen.
Right. You're not a fan of that either. I heard you. We talked about the terms for the new decade, and one of them was exing, which simply means you're obsessed or addicted to your ex, speaking of exes, and all the drama maybe even. So when you're exing, you're playing on again, off again with your ex. Not a good idea ever, it doesn't seem. Unless, I don't know, is there ever a time when that's good?
To take your ex back?
No. No, I mean just to like be constant contact with the person who's your ex.
Maybe if you're co-parenting.
Yeah, that's
right?
A good.
And that's about it. Other than that, they're your ex for a reason, right? And the more, especially if you're a woman, if you're constantly in contact with your ex, let's say he broke up with you and you're the one pining for him, it just keeps that string attached. You're not going to get over him if you're still talking to him.
So in the case of Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston, many of us saw the SAG Awards when he seemed to touch her in just that way. They shared that glance. He was backstage watching her in this sort of glowing way, just very proud. He just looked so happy as he was watching her accept her award and step up to the podium. And a lot of the internet went nuts because people were hoping, praying that these two maybe would get back to each other. So that circles back to the question you just asked. When is it good to get back with the ex? Is it good to get back with the ex?
It depends on what your ex did, right? I mean, I love me some Brad. I love me some Jen. And if you want my opinion, Brad's looking better than ever. Sort of
Jennifer looks really amazing,
Brad,
too, I will
right?
say.
And by the way, just a little side note, Brad held up his SAG award. And I don't know if you guys listened to it or remember. The first thing he said, man, I've got to update my Tinder profile with this picture. Okay? So if you're doubting online dating, even Brad Pitt's talking about his own Tinder profile.
He was later asked about that. And he said, no, I was just kidding. I thought it was a fun thing to say.
I mean,
but
can you imagine?
Yeah, no, I cannot. But let's get to the Sharon Stone thing in a second. You were saying not really a good idea. It doesn't seem like you have clients who come in and say, you know what, maybe I'll just go back.
Yeah, I think so much of that is just comfort. And we miss the person and maybe we're still grieving the person. If your ex broke up with you or you left your ex and the person was toxic, wasn't treating you well, unless this person has done a thorough detox, soul searching, lots of therapy, rehab, whatever it is, your problems when you're dating will be your problems again.
Interesting. That's a good way to look at it. Good way to remind yourself. Is this person different? Have they worked to change some of the other behaviors that were a problem for us? And maybe yourself too, right? Like, so how's this going to work again just because it looks very comfortable and maybe attractive for that reason?
Just know that you're going to get into the same swamp again. And if you're willing to accept that swamp this time, right? Every relationship has its 80% good, 20%, not so great, right? So you know what that 20% is and you're walking back into it. So just don't have rose-colored glasses on that's gone forever. You get what you get and you know what you're getting.
I always thought the best dating site would be, and please tell me if there is this dating site because you're aware of all this stuff. The one that has the exes all give like a Yelp review of the person they dated, because that's the information you want. You want to go to the person and say, hey, what's going on here? What is the deal?
Yeah, there was an app years ago called Lulu where you could rank a guy, right? People that had dated him. And it's like, oh, you know, nice guy, total mama's boy. And it's funny. I was working with the producer at another show whose brother was rated on Lulu. And she got wind of it. And she's like, oh, my God, this is exactly true. Nice guy, but mama's boy.
Oh.
This is what she said about her own brother. He's now married. So he found someone that wanted a nice guy and a mama's boy. Like, there's a lid for every pot, guys. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you can find somebody. It's true. Yeah, absolutely true. But so that is not around anymore, or
it didn't really
get any traction, because I haven't heard of that, but okay.
Well, they said it was sort of, what's the opposite of misogynistic?
Oh,
I don't know. Right, where guys were getting railed.
It was railed, only guys.
And they wouldn't let you rank
railed.
Women.
That's a problem.
Now imagine that if doesn't that make was sense. The case. So it didn't make sense. It kind of lost traction, but I think implicitly it kind of is a good idea, but it's kind of a bad idea, too, because people that may be toxic and you say no to could get on there and give you a 1-star rating, right? It's like being on Yelp as a business.
So maybe that's why it doesn't work.
Maybe that's why
because the rejection and the emotions and the whole dating thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay. Sharon Stone, you mentioned that before, because unlike Brad Pitt, who kind of said this is my new Tinder profile and was joking about it, and everyone's like, wow, is he really on Tinder? Sharon Stone really did sign up for Bumble.
Yes.
And then they canceled her account. They blocked her.
Because they're like, there's a person impersonating Sharon Stone. We must block this person. And guess what? Sharon Stone tweeted, like, hey, Bumble just, you know, booted me from their app. And they sent her an apology. They reinstated her account. But guys, if you're out there thinking it's the grass is always greener, and we think Hollywood celebrities have it made, that there's just a cadre of people sitting in a room waiting to date Sharon Stone, guess what? She's on Bumble, too.
Isn't that crazy?
To meet a nice, good man. So get inspired, Chicagoans and nationwide people that are listening to us. The lid to your pot is out there.
Okay, that's good to think about, that positivity. Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black. She met her guy, she revealed, from Tinder also. So she's out there. And there's a number of them in this story about how some celebrities, I don't know if they all use their real name, but they're out there doing it. So we have another story here, but before we get to it, because I don't think it should go in this order, there was a story about a Chicago investment manager who allegedly swindled a lot of money from women he met online. This is the part that when you hear those stories, obviously small percentage, very, very small percentage of the folks out there. We're going to get to that in a second, but we do have a caller, Betty. She wants to know, I think you're concerned about online dating. You, like me, maybe have some reservations about the whole thing, how it works. Betty, you're on WGN Radio.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm 70 years old, and I'm a widow, And my kids are concerned that if I try online dating, that I could meet big bad people or something. I just want to know what recommendations you might have for someone who is more or less a senior type citizen.
That's a great question.
Betty, 2/3 of my clients are singles over 50 in their 60s, 70s. So love is possible at any age. It's never too late. When you get online, you just want to be smart, right? Get yourself to the date. Don't have anybody pick you up at your house. Go to a place that you're comfortable at and always tell somebody who you're going out with. Trust your gut also. When you're messaging with somebody on one of these sites, talk to them on the phone before you go out with them. So it's a great tool. It just requires a little bit of safety and a little bit of common sense.
Are there any sites that would be better than others for someone like me, do you think?
You know, there's a lot of free dating apps out there. I might recommend a site that you pay a little bit for, because just expending even 10, 20, 25 bucks a month, I know it might sound like a lot of money, it's like a buck a day, but it gets rid of a lot of riffraff, right? And again,
or people who aren't serious.
I'm speaking in gross generalities here, but if you even have to pay a dollar a day, you're going to get rid of a lot of people that shouldn't be on those sites.
Good thought.
Hope that helps, Betty. Good luck out there.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. So the whole, we have to get to micro cheating because we don't have a lot of time here. I did talk about that earlier. What is it? And is it like emotional? Like, you hear about emotional cheating, right? Where you're just sort of kind of emotionally tied to each other. But micro cheating,
it's like the little sibling of emotional cheating.
Is it not as bad, or
is
it worse?
It's like the baby sister. Okay. It kind of leads to, you know, micro cheating. Some people, it's gray zone stuff, guys. There's no definition as to exactly what micro cheating is. But let's just paint let me give you an example. You're a married woman, you know, allegedly happily married, and your company hires a super hot CFO, smoke show, right? And suddenly, when you're going to the big meeting that happens every Friday, you just find yourself tempted to wear that cute curve-hugging red dress.
Right? Or maybe talk to them a little extra, give them a lot of your attention kind of thing.
Literally.
Run to the break room when you know she's there.
Exactly. It's all those little steps that just indicate that you might be interested in someone. But yeah, look at, if you're thinking about wearing something different than you normally wear, then just kind of have a little talk with yourself.
Maybe you're doing the whole micro-cheating thing.
What am I doing here?
Yeah, it seems harmless, but maybe you're just a little too engaged in that person.
It's harmless now, right? And it's just kind of fun. However, if it goes step 2, 3, 4, like, look at, it can be a slippery slope is my only point.
This is something that might be helpful to Betty, who just called in. We just have a little bit of time left here, Bella, is Tinder has announced today that they're adding a panic button for when the bad dates go bad. You hear this in Uber, there's now an emergency button or something you can press. Tinder says there might be a need for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's good that they're trying to address something. My opinion is they should have a background search. They should prevent the issues, not wait until there's a panicky situation where you have to dial 911. Put in a background search. Get sex offenders and criminal offenders and, you know, whatever it is off of the sites and the apps, right? And then hopefully you won't get into those situations.
Makes sense. A lot of sense. And we have a number of other things we want to get to, but we'll have to wait till next Friday.
How does this go so fast?
I don't know, but we'll take your calls again every Friday. Bella comes in, talks about relationships. There's nothing she hasn't seen. Smart Dating Academy is her business. She helps you find the right person to be with, but you also, you deal with all kinds of relationship issues. You have this wealth of knowledge. You've been on all the talk shows. I see you on everything. Good Morning America and Today Show, and it's cool that you started your business right here in Chicago.
Oh, thank you. In fact, we're looking for a great deserving single mom who wants a dating makeover, and if you know somebody, come to our site, nominate this person. Somebody with a good story who could deserve just a little zhuzh up. So I'm donating my services, a photo shoot. We're going to get, you know, we're going to get this woman transformed.
I love it. Who doesn't need a zhuzh?
A zhuzh. Who needs? Next week, we'll be talking about how to spell the word zhuzh.
What exactly is a zhuzh? I get it. Thank you, Bella. Good seeing you. Back live here in the Skyline Studios, we have the folks from the Indoor Blues Fest here with us. And we have a little taste of what you might hear if you decided you were going to go to the Indoor Blues Fest. Oh, that sounds so good. Kind of warms you up here. We were here with co-founder of Hey Nannies, Chip Brooks, Straight Arrow Productions president, David Katzman. Welcome to you both, gentlemen. How you doing today?
Hey, Anna. We're doing great.
That's just, I mean, I love the blues. Who doesn't? We're from Chicago. It's just cool. We were talking earlier. We have so many great outdoor festivals, Blues Fest being one of them. You guys decided, hey, let's do it indoors in the winter.
Absolutely.
Why not?
So we started Hey Nanny about 15 months ago in Arlington Heights to create a great music venue in the suburbs, and that has been working. But Hey Nanny's part of a complex of in Arlington Heights that includes the Metropolis Performing Arts Center and a bunch of other restaurants and bars. So when we got the space, I said, there's a lot of possible performance spaces here. We should try to do a winter festival. So we decided to start with Chicago Blues because it's some of the greatest music in the world.
Oh, it is. And people come from all over the world, as you know, to come listen to our blues. It's just, it's something special about the city. How's the response been so far?
Oh, people are really excited about it for not only because it's an indoor festival and you can go to we've got four stages going. You can go to all four stages without putting on a coat or anything. Mm-hmm. Parking is convenient. So everybody's really excited to have this happen. So we're very encouraged.
I'm excited too. I heard about it like a month and a half ago, and it wasn't even through your PR channels. It was just seeing something about it. I thought, what a great idea. Dave, how come we don't have all of our festivals indoors in the winter?
Well,
why is this such a novel idea?
First off, it's hard to find a venue that actually has four the building
space.
Actually has six venues, but this year we're using four. And you know, to have to go from one club outdoors to another club out in the middle of winter in this area doesn't work. So this is an amazing opportunity with the actual real estate.
And
it really is very...
How many people can you accommodate?
We can do up to 400 people. What we're trying to do is make sure that if everybody shows up, even though we've got four stages, if everybody shows up for one show, that we can accommodate everybody. So,
and I should mention, this is next Friday...
Exactly right. We're starting next Friday, January 31st at 6 p.m. at Hey Nanny in downtown Arlington Heights. And it's officially the Hey Nanny Winter Blues Summit, because that sounds really cool.
Oh, that does sound
so we're kicking
Winter
off at Hey Nanny at 6 o'clock on Friday night, and then we will have shows at Hey Nanny. And then we have two stages upstairs from us at the Metropolis Ballroom. So the biggest shows will be upstairs in the ballroom, which can accommodate 400 people. And we'll keep going on Saturday, which is February 1st, we'll expand to four stages. We're going to add a stage at the Big Shot Piano Lounge, which is right downstairs from us. We've got some really great Chicago piano players that are coming in to play shows there. So we'll keep on going all day and all night on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we'll kick
off.
Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to kick off, so to speak, at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I like it. It's like the Puppy Bowl. It's alternative programming.
Exactly. But we will, our main stage show will kick off around 2 or 1 o'clock. And so we will be done by 2:30, and everyone will have time to pack up and get home for their Super Bowl party.
Oh, so you'll be done by then.
We will.
So when you say all day and all night on the Friday and Saturday, or Saturday in particular, what are you talking about? What hours?
Well, we'll be done about midnight, actually. Oh. So we'll go from 6 to a little after midnight.
That's past my bedtime. No, that's all night
10.
For me.
Oh, Friday, you said?
I'm sorry. Which day?
Friday, the last show starts at 10, but we'll quit around midnight.
Yeah.
So the main stage show is at 10 o'clock that night. And same thing on Saturday night.
Okay. And so tell us about who you're going to have, Dave. Are you in charge of that piece of the program?
Well, not in charge. We've all been working on it together, and it's been a great team effort.
I bet.
But I've worked in the blues world for quite a long time. And
are you a musician yourself?
I am a musician. I will be playing on one of the stages on Saturday, I believe. But I also am an engineer and a producer, and my company promotes blues quite extensively.
Yeah.
I worked for Buddy Guy at Buddy Guy's Legends for 21 years.
How about that?
And all the artists here are actually my friends, which is a benefit.
Well, I imagine it's a small community, isn't it?
It is. And the benefit of Chicago is that we have world-wide artists that
world
live
class.
Here.
Yeah.
That live here. I mean, this is home, obviously, sweet home Chicago. Mm-hmm. But we have some incredible shows, and one thing that I'd really like to mention, we are screening a movie that is called Sidemen, A Long Road to Glory, and what it's about is Pine Top Perkins, Willie Smith, and Hubert Sumlin, all of who had played with Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters as Sidemen, and attached to that, we're having a discussion panel in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday with some of the top side men that are alive still and that have played with people like Albert King and Bob Marley and everybody, Muddy Waters. And it's going to be a pretty special thing. And the director is coming in, Scott Rosenbaum, who directed the film, and he'll be part of the panel discussion too. So it's kind of a kind of break in the music, but it's all about the music.
It is all about the music. And, you know, the music, we talk about the worldwide appeal. You've been in the blues business. You know the blues, the people who are legends, as you just mentioned,
yes.
Buddy Guy, so many others, Muddy Waters. But what do you, the appeal? There is such a global appeal. People come to Chicago just to hear the blues.
Well, it's a true American music.
Yeah.
Country and blues and jazz are true American musics. And Chicago being the home of electric blues and the beginning of electric blues, this is really ground zero for it. Mississippi being the home of acoustic blues.
Mm-hmm.
Friday night, the big name is the Kinsey Report.
Right.
Kinsey Report? That sounds like something out of Washington, D.C.
Well,
Kinsey Report. They're big blues band.
They are very big blues band. And they tour the world. All these bands tour the world. Saturday night's headliner is very, very special. It's Jimmy Johnson and Syl Johnson.
Great.
Brothers who have not formally performed together in at least 2 to 3 decades.
Oh, nice.
Sometimes one of them will come in on another one's show and sit in for a song or something like that, but not doing a show together.
So they're doing more solo shows, but they're reuniting.
Well, they're two different acts.
Oh, I see.
And Syl Johnson actually is the most sampled artist in hip-hop. Hip-hop sampling some of the blues. He was hipped out, sampled by Wu-Tang Clan and people like that.
Yeah.
And he is world-renowned. Jimmy Johnson's world-renowned. They're both veterans of the blues scene, and it's a very special performance. And then we're ending up on Sunday with a big bang, because we want everyone to go out remembering this, with Little Ed and the Blues Imperials, which is just a wonderful way to end it.
What a fantastic weekend, just nonstop blues. Do you buy a ticket for the entire weekend? Do you buy it for one day? How do you go about doing this, Chip?
You can buy either a 3-day pass and go to all of everything, or you can buy a Friday pass or a Saturday pass or a Sunday pass. All those tickets are for sale at our website, heynonny.com. That's HEYNONNY.com. And you can go there. The one-day passes for Friday or for Sunday are $60 a piece. For Saturday, it's $120. And for the 3-day pass, it's $175. And Saturday, we are starting actually at 10 o'clock in the morning. We'll have a blues brunch both Saturday and Sunday that's included in your ticket price. So you not only get the music, but you get and the movie. You get breakfast as part of your deal, and it won't just be breakfast. It'll be breakfast with cool performances. So that'll happen both Saturday and Sunday, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning.
And I imagine there'll be some adult beverages served throughout the day.
Yeah,
you know, if people want them. I mean, we weren't thinking
of that. 10 in the morning,
too
early?
But, you know, I think Anna's got a good idea, Dave. Maybe
Put that on the schedule. Get me involved in the planning meetings, all right?
Devlin just wants some adult beverages.
More than welcome.
Check.
I have a feeling the blues go hand in hand with a beer or two. Sometimes
indeed.
I've known to see that happen every once in a while. Hey, do you think that more festivals and just generally, I mean, you guys are putting on something pretty special this weekend, and
you're
getting such great response to it, and I can see why. You know, it's the dead of winter, and we all were looking for things to do, and this is such a fun, special thing. Do you think more of these festivals that we have, the Music Fest, could go indoors? Do you see that at all?
The problem is that there really aren't a lot of places where you can put 4, 5, or 6 stages together like we can. Our spaces are kind of unique in that way. The only other places that would have that kind of a setup would be like a university or something might have that many performance spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these kinds of things are going to happen in Arlington Heights at Heynonny in the future.
All right. So that got the plug in on the very end. I like how you did that. You're very good at this. These are professionals in the studio today. These are not the amateurs. Chip Brooks, he's the co-founder of Heynonny, Straight Arrow Productions president, Dave Katzman. Go check it out. It's the Heynonny Winter Blues Summit next weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Go to heynonny.com if you want to get tickets, right?
You got it.
Cover everything. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much,
Anna.
Thank you very much.
Coming up here on WGN Radio, we're going to talk trending topics, and this is fascinating. So one of the trending topics is scientists have recreated the voice of a 3,000-year-old mummy. The voice box and larynx were so well-preserved that they were able to recreate the voice. And it's a little creepy. We'll hear it coming up in Trending Topics. Back here live on see you guys. We still have the Blues Festival people here clearing out of the studio as Lauren Lapka steps in and Steve Bertrand steps in for Trending Topics. A lot going on, guys. This is kind of cool. I don't know if you guys will be watching the Grammys. I'm a big fan of the Grammys.
I don't know. They're apparently rigged now, so I don't know if it's going to be the same.
That's what, you know, you hear that story, right?
I know. It was
just startling. They, of course, push back pretty strongly on that and say it's more of a personality dispute. But the former woman who was the head of the Grammys is saying that, you know, hey, this, I can give you evidence that this whole thing, the voting is not exactly as on the up and up as you might have thought.
See, it's questionable just because of the timing of her announcing this, right? You know, because there's a quarrel.
Well, it's questioning in which way, though? Like, it questions
because
her
now that
story,
she's out, you know, kind of in bad graces with everybody,
right.
Now she's talking about it?
Right. She didn't leave because of it, right? She got fired, I think.
Right. She was accused of creating a unsuitable environment, let's say.
So, in other words, if it was such a bad thing, she was maybe overseeing it.
Potentially, she said that when she started to out, we don't get too deep in the weeds here, when she started to try to out the person who was in charge, that she actually was then sort of told to leave. So we're going to work that out because there's a lot of scrutiny on that whole thing. But the positive thing out of all this, guys, this is a really cool local story, is the Buffalo Grove High School Orchestra instructor is a finalist for the Music Educator Award Grammy.
Nice.
Isn't that cool?
Cool.
Can he play with Aerosmith, or she play with Aerosmith?
I would love to see her on stage. I think it's one of those awards that gets announced kind of before the ceremony, but it's still so cool. She's a Northwestern University music graduate, and her name's Elizabeth Bennett, and she's just I heard an interview with her, and she's like, I'm just humbled by this. I hope it inspires students. And I mean,
that's fantastic.
Awesome.
So we're going to be rooting for her. We'll be looking on the social media, see if she gets that award. That'd be pretty cool. Hey, Valentine's Day just around the corner, and if you're looking for a nice thing for your honey, this is something that just was announced, that they're going to do a dream bundle of Garrett's popcorn and Frango mints.
Ooh.
Under $50. They put together the whole package for you, so you can. That might be an option for you.
You know, the big thing now, I guess, I just read about another school in Iowa where they're getting rid of Valentine's Day.
Who? What? What?
They're like the cards?
Yeah, they're not celebrating that because some kids might feel left out.
Oh, it's schools.
Yeah.
But I thought you just give one to everybody in the class.
I don't know, but I read today there's a school in Iowa doing it, and they said it's the fourth school in the state or something, like it's a growing trend, that they're going to have a love day instead where they
the difference?
They do nice things for everybody, not a particular.
Hmm. Well, I think if anything, just make that the rule. Okay, we're going to bring in Valentine's, but make sure you bring one for everybody.
Yeah. I don't remember my kids bringing in Valentine's.
Oh, we did it.
That was so
kidding?
Fun, going to pick out which ones you wanted, usually based on whatever movie was popular at the moment.
Right, and then sometimes there's a little candy with it or some kind of fun thing. It's just, it's fun. I don't know, they still do it at my daughter's school, but interesting stuff. Okay, guys, this may freak you out. Listen to this. Scientists have recreated the voice of a 3,000-year-old ancient Egyptian mummy.
Nice.
Was a priest back in the day, and the remains were so well preserved that his soft tissue is still intact. So they went through this whole thing of mapping the inside of his mouth, his throat. They say it was so well preserved that they're able to recreate what his voice box and everything. So here's what that mummy would sound like. We got it. But it's sort of, I mean, it's like, how do they do that? And sort of creepy, right? What?
So they didn't make him say words?
Didn't make him say words. They just literally tried to recreate what his vocal cords
like what the vibration would have been over.
Yeah. Like what his voice would have sounded like.
How did they know in the movies that he'd be like,
maybe that is all he said.
Right.
Maybe that was his word. That was the only way.
That's so funny, Lord. Who knew? He really did talk like a mummy.
Yeah. Now we know those are actually scientifically correct.
Right.
The mummy
he
movies.
He wore that every day. They didn't do that just for the burial.
So there you go. That's out of Leeds, England. They were able to do that with a 3,000-year-old mummy, huh? Remember we talked about the frozen iguanas that were falling off the trees because it's so cold in Florida?
Yeah.
Well, apparently now they're cooking them up in Florida.
What?
Mm-hmm. They're making them the chicken of the trees, and they're serving them up at some marketplaces in Florida after they fall. That's not right, is it?
I can't imagine those are tasting good.
If they die.
Well, I don't think they die, though. That was the warning from the scientists at the time. We read this story the other day where they said that they're not dead. They're just sort of in that hibernation thing that
they do. I understand that, but they could die from the fall. I mean, they could go into hibernation and then, you know, die on the way down to the...
If they're really high up in the trees.
As they hit the apron around the pool, bounce a foot or two, come down.
This is one of those only in Florida stories. They're literally just selling the meat from the iguanas, right? So it's...
Yeah, it really
grosses me out, frankly. And I can't imagine there's that much meat on it either. But so there you go. So they were warning about that, and now this is what Floridians are doing. Indiana will allow the Oscars 2020 betting at sportsbooks as we try to sort out in Illinois how to deal with legalized gambling and get all the details worked out. Indiana moves forward, becoming the second state after New Jersey to allow you to bet on the Academy Awards. I don't know. I think that'd be kind of cool. I mean, it changes it from just sports. Some people are very interested in sports.
And in Illinois, it's going to be just sports, so it won't be you won't be able to do it on the Oscars.
No, nothing like that. But it's interesting how they keep expanding the role in Indiana. And I think there'd be a lot of interest in doing that kind of thing. People who aren't necessarily interested in sports might say, hey, I'll bet on the awards show. Okay, they're bet another major hotel chain getting rid of those travel-sized toiletries. You've heard of some of them, eliminating plastics, and there's a lot of waste in that kind of thing. So now the Fairmont, the Mondrian, so many brands, I mean, so many hotel major chains are saying no more of the toiletries. But I kind of feel like I'll miss the toiletries.
I don't really mind when they have the big bottle just already stationed in the shower that you can kind of squeeze.
The communal one?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes those little ones, you forget to take the cap off before you go in the shower, and then your hands are wet, and you're like, come on, and you can't get it off.
So, and then it's hard to get it out of the bottle, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Or you use the whole thing on accident.
I will find, though, the ones that are mounted on the wall, they're not as good.
Very watery or something.
Yeah, they're cheaper,
or they're crusty. You know, the people don't clean the underneath part. That part's kind of can be gross.
Never thought of that.
No, well, you know, check it out, because sometimes it just squirts out and it's like a big crusty thing that that's not fun. But I understand why they're doing it. I get the whole movement.
They're not doing it for the environment. They're doing it because they're saving money.
It is a big cost savings.
Of course it is.
But if you're bringing your luggage on with you, as so many people do now to avoid the baggage fees, you bring it through the TSA and that kind of thing. You can't bring all your shampoo, conditioner, and soaps and stuff like that unless you put them all in those 3 ounce containers. I guess you could do that if you had a bunch of them.
What a packing ordeal that would be to load your 3 ounce bottles.
No, but on top of what you're already loading, the stuff that you sort of feel like, right?
We have a huge collection of all kinds of toiletries from hotels.
You're stocked for a while. Yeah. You can live through this whole thing for a while. Lauren's got it covered. Hey, did you see what happened at Midway Airports? Speaking of travel, they, you know that box where now, because we have recreational marijuana legal here in Illinois, but not every state, so if you forget and you've got it with you and you're traveling to a state that doesn't allow it, they have that box that you can deposit.
The amnesty box, right?
That's it.
Yeah.
Exactly it. Well, somebody went and stole the weed out of the amnesty box at Midway.
That didn't take long.
Free weed! You've seen the taxes in Illinois. They know how much that recreational weed is. So this guy said, hey, I'm going to grab the marijuana, and he did, out of the receptacle, and stole it at 8:20 in the morning. Boy, Wednesday, I think it was.
How did he break into it?
Let's see. It says temporary amnesty boxes. He just grabbed it. He reached in and grabbed it. I guess there's enough of an opening that his hand could fit in inside the receptacle, so he could get
at an airport. Not that many people around. Oh wait, yeah, there are. How did no one see this?
I guess they're reminding you, police, that this is a crime. You're not allowed to steal the weed out of the amnesty boxes.
Though I wonder.
That's a good question.
Since we're having such a shortage issue already.
Right, resale. The white elephant store.
It's an entrepreneur right there.
Pre-owned weed.
Pre-owned. Oh, my gosh. And then Springfield, Illinois, on track to get a marijuana lounge.
Coming? I love this.
You do?
Because it's a real problem for people who live in apartments or condos. They can't smoke anywhere legally. And Mayor Lightfoot talked about allowing cigar shops to... also allow recreational marijuana smoking. Then she pulled back on that. They're going back to the legislature for something. But yeah, so it's kind of like this is near, it's adjacent to a dispensary. So it can be a place you can go hang out and, build a hot dog stand next door.
Well, that is the issue, right? You just don't know where you can go for it. So they need to come up with a solution here in the city for that.
Right, right.
Yeah, so this is what they're doing. It's in downtown Springfield, and they were granted the first permit to open an establishment.
I think this is true, but if you are living in an apartment building, you can go outside and smoke your cigarette outside the door somewhere, but you can't do that with a joint.
Mm-hmm. So, they're not allowed on the streets, right?
Right, they're not allowed in public.
You wouldn't know, Steve Bertrand. You would not know that that's the law.
I have not noticed that.
Can we remind people of the law? You're not allowed to just walk around on the downtown streets and smoke. Smells like skunk, I tell you. And then I know you like the smell of skunk.
Yeah, what do you think this fog is? It's all the smoke.
That could be it. That could be a contributor. I'm not sure. By the way, Coca-Cola refuses to ban plastic bottles. They say that that's just how we do it, and we're going to keep doing it. We're going to try to make some sort of move in recycling and innovation, but that they're going to continue to use plastic bottles for now. There's just so much consumer demand, and they've got their bottling plants going, and it's just too hard to eliminate them right now.
I think that's a big part of their product. I mean, it's more than just the taste and the feel. It's the bottle, too. Drinking it out of the bottle. It's not the same as a can.
No, it isn't. You're right. There's a different feel. And that's what they're hearing from their customers. So not yet for them, even though the movement is definitely going in that direction. Single-use plastics. A lot of companies taking a hard look at, you know, what they do. All right, that's it for Trending Topics. All right, we're going to check in with Rokan, see what's coming up on his show today, 3 to 7. We'll also check in with the newsroom, find out what's happening there, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, right here on WGN.